6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Friday, July 8th, 2022. Dave Krieger with you on the Power Hour. Welcome back to this segment. PowerHourFood.com. We told you about that website, and if you go there to PowerHourFood.com, you can sign up for a free webinar with Marjorie Wildcraft. She is here with us for the next hour because we've been talking all about stuff that has to do with making sure you survive what they elite are predicting as an upcoming global food crisis. This is one of the reasons why we're now carrying the White Harvest non-GMO heirloom seed kits at the Power Mall. I got mine. I've got the Summer Savory Herb Certified Organic Seeds. I've got the lettuce mix, five different kinds of lettuce. And I have the 40-pack of various veggies guaranteed to sprout, provided you follow the instructions. And, of course, if you don't have the green thumb and you want to know how to grow crops in a grid-down network, we have the woman on the phone that will make it happen for you. Marjorie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back. Yeah, we are, you know, for anybody who's even halfway awake, and I think the masses are starting to wake up now, you're not going to make it through the next decade if you're not growing some of your own food. You may not make it through the next year because we're all waiting. The inflation numbers are coming out on the 13th. We know the official inflation numbers are a joke, but they're still going up and up and up. So, and you and I see it all the time. As I said earlier, I mean, I travel a lot, and I like to go into grocery stores and drugstores just to look and see. And really, 10 to 20% of all the shelves are empty in stores everywhere. And, you know, they kind of hide it. Sometimes they have one row up front, but nothing in the back. Sometimes it's just pure emptiness. You know, and we've kind of gotten used to that, right? We've kind of gotten used to, like, you know, whatever, you don't notice it. Pay attention. That's just going to get worse and worse and worse. You know, and I predict the next thing that the government will do will be price and wage controls, which means everything is gonna, we're going to all end up having to be criminals on a black market just to get food.
Well, you know, it's sad that it's sad, Marjorie. Yeah, it's sad you have to bring that up. But, you know, here's the thing. Everywhere the taxation has gone up, the underground economy has boomed. I mean, it works in the same, it works, it's correlation. You know, it works the same way. Happens in every country, even Chile. Yep. They did a study down there of all that and found out that when the government raised taxes, the underground economy took off like a rocket. So I get what you're saying. And see, nobody knows how long the crisis is going to last. You obviously have been seeing the reports about the cops in Holland shooting at farmers that are, you know, driving their tractors in a convoy protesting the government's demand to cut 30% of the farms. I mean, this is crazy. They're actually forcing a food shortage, are they not?
Yes, they are. That's one example. There's many, many, many other examples going on. And the other, like right here in the U.S., so the price of diesel is critical to every aspect of farming. And, you know, that is just going up and up and up. The prices of fertilizers are going up and up, and seeds, all kinds of things are just going up. There's a lot of farmers here that are just saying, forget it. We just know we're not going to be able to make it work this year, so we're not even going to plant. Not to mention the drought in the western United States. And so many countries, even if they do have a bumper crop, are shutting down exports. They're saying, nope. Like India just announced that they were going to shut down. India had a big bumper crop of the last year of wheat, and they just said, no, we're not going to export any. You know, and of course, we all know Ukraine is one of the big bread baskets to the world, and that's all stopped. And, you know, most of the Ukrainian farmers now are trying to figure out how to stay alive in a war versus growing food. I don't know what Europe is going to do this winter when they don't have that Russian gas to heat their homes. It's like we're, you know, even
they're
the
already
CEO
rationing.
Of, are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. The CEO of the Rockefeller Foundation, I'm not going to say it's my favorite organization on earth, but they're definitely one of the ones plugged in with all the planning of the events we're living through. You know, it was last month he was saying, look, in 6 months, which will put us in November, all hell is going to break loose. And what that comment is related to is that as the price of food goes up, that's when people start to riot and violence happens and, you know, the rule of law breaks down and craziness happens. And he's saying that's going to be happening in 6 months. And the Biden administration, I mean, we're a little bit better off here in the United States because, you know, we do produce more food. We are a little cushier. But, you know, even the Biden administration, good Lord, help anybody who's listening to that. But even they're saying, you know, look, the crisis is going to be real. Even here, it's going to be real. So, you know, the good news is you can prepare for that. You're listening to this now. You know this is coming. You can already see the signs. You already see the inflation in the food prices and the shortages, and you see the your price your gas going up. You know this is not a trend that's going to reverse. It's not temporary, which is what they used to say last year. They were trying to keep us all to calm down. It's not peaked like the other conversation that the mainstream media is saying. This is happening, and the good news is though. You know, buying backup food supplies, buying seeds, all of that is still relatively inexpensive compared to what it's going to be even just 2 or 3 months from now. Listening to Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway at his shareholders meeting, and he's like, look, we're seeing inflation in everything, and it is only going to get worse. It's systemic, and it's not something that's going to turn around suddenly. But again, the good news is it's still affordable. You're listening to this right now. This is the warning. This is the wake-up call. Go do something about it. You can still buy a 50-pound bag of beans and a 50-pound bag of rice, and it, you know, it's not going to break your bank. Get your seeds. And the other thing is that you can grow food. You know, you don't need a military, industrial, governmental complex in order to grow food. You can do it in your backyard. You can do it on a vacant lot. You can do it on a rooftop or a balcony. You can find somebody else with a yard if you don't have one. You know, you can still work directly with the earth to provide all your basic needs. So that is the saving grace in this whole crazy. It's just like the news headlines are getting more and more insane every single day from what I'm seeing.
Well, yeah, I mean, and everybody has been, you know, this is the one thing we have in common. We could all starve together. And I just read a report, Marjorie, where foreign investors are controlling literally 37.6 million acres of pasture, timber, and farmland. Foreign interests, China, Russia, Iran, two offshore banking hubs in the Caymans and Switzerland, each own 600,000 acres. And then Gates. You know, all these people
Gates
are buying up land.
Gates, I think, has 300,000 acres. He's the largest private.
Yeah, just about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he just bought 2,100 acres up near the North Dakota-Canadian border. So,
jeez, yeah.
Crazy it may be. Now, here's the thing, folks. It's called powerhourfood.org. Or is it .com?
.com.
I got to go back.
Yeah,
.com.
Yeah.
All right, it's .com.
PowerHourFood.com.
Right. Here's the thing. Tell me about the webinar. Tell everybody about the webinar.
Yeah, so I have been looking at this crisis that we're in now for 15 or 20 years. I've known something like this would happen, right? It's not rocket science. It's just a fact that we live in a system that looks real robust but is incredibly vulnerable. And so I said, what is the fastest way to get somebody who knows absolutely nothing? Maybe they're older, out of shape, you know, it might be in a grid down situation. How can we get somebody producing a lot of food really quickly and deeply nutritious food? Because, you know, malnutrition is the biggest issue in the American diet right now. And what is the easiest thing to grow? What is the fastest thing to produce? What's going to get you the most calories for every minute of time that you have to spend? So in that webinar, I'll go a little bit over the world situation, just so that you're absolutely clear that you need to do this. I don't spend a lot of time with that. And then I go into a three-part solution of, you know, how to get started with this. So, you know, a small flock of chickens for eggs, a small garden, and a rabbitry. You'll end up knowing how to produce at least half of your own food in a backyard space, really the size of three parking spots, in less than an hour a day. And I'll go through the what it looks like, the time it takes, the calories it produced, you know, how delicious it's. Oh, my God, it's going to be so delicious. and you'll walk away with a plan, regardless of where you live, regardless of what season it is, what to do, what you can do to get started today, getting this going. And then you'll have a plan for meeting at least that basic need, and then how to expand that way beyond that to all the other things that you might want. So you'll come away very, very, very empowered.
You got to love that idea, folks. And here's another thing. I've been working on my, and we have a forum now that is open for gardening, and you get to go online, ask questions of other people, and it's thepowerhour.com. Go to your menu, go to community, go to forum and click on there. I've already posted pictures of my I actually built a compost bin out of steel.
Nice.
And all I have to do is put a lid on it and put a little foam liner around the top of the lid so it seals in the odors. And it will hold 10 cubic feet of compost.
You know, that's so good that you're starting with compost. Yeah, that is so good. People don't realize how important compost is, because that's the key to being able to feed your garden in perpetuity, even after all the feed stores and the garden centers close. So we need to think not only about producing food for ourselves, but then how do we produce food? How do we produce the nutrients that our gardens and our livestock need? So that's awesome. I'm actually going to hop over there and take a look at your photos. I'll log in.
Well, I thought it was the most unusual thing, even though people are looking at me going, wait a minute, why are you building that compost bin before you build the doghouse? You know, I feel like I'm in the doghouse because I built the compost bin before the doghouse. So here's the thing, you know, with the compost bin, I figured, look, if you're going to get started, and it takes time to get compost done, I mean, you can take a metal trash can, and we posted an article on our email blast for you under Gardening, Farming, Homesteading that actually shows you how to make a compost bin out of a trash can. So you can start out with just even 30 or 40 gallons, not 10 cubic feet like I did. I mean, my box is about 40 inches long by about 36 inches, 39 inches high, and about 36 inches deep. So it's going to hold about 10 cubic feet of compost. Now, the thing is that because of the fact I'm on pretty much a rock as far as soil goes, I have, you know, really crappy soil here. And so I'm going to go ahead and get the worms and put the worms, get the red worms and put the worms in. This is the thing. Now, I've also got another article on here, Marjorie, and I always want to feed the fire. Because people think that you can throw, this is kind of like why they put labels, warning labels on hair dryers saying, please do not use this in the bathtub. Well, when it comes to composting, yeah, I knew you'd like that. When it comes to composting, there's 8 items you should never put in your compost bin. And why did they do that? Because people took hair dryers in the bathtub. And so we don't want this kind of garbage in your garden. And so we have an article on here about what not to compost, because people think you just throw everything in a barrel and you come out and you get bibbidi bobbidi boo and your vegetables will grow. And no, that doesn't work like that. The onion scraps, the citrus peels, the eggshells, the stale bread, best added only in small amounts. What you shouldn't put in there is meat and fish scraps, dairy fats and oils, plants or woods treated, any wood treated with pesticides or preservatives, anything with insecticides, fungicides, no, not in the compost pile, anything with black walnut tree debris, any of that. Now, you know, that really blows me out. You know, tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, ornamentals such as azalea, viburnum, hydrangea. If you, I mean, there's certain things like this black walnut tree debris apparently will affect if you add that kind of stuff to your plants, that it could hurt them. And then, of course, diseased, insect-infested plants, weeds that have gone to seed, charcoal ash, dog and cat poop. No. So I'll let you run with that.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with you, especially with the treated woods. Black walnuts are pretty famous. I think it's alanine. There's a special compound that they excrete so that things around them don't grow, so that they don't have any plant competition. It's a strategy that they have. And there are some very rare selected plants that will grow with them. But in general, the black walnuts, kind of, you know, you want to, if you've got one of those, thank your lucky stars. They're a great food source. But, yeah, you're probably not going to want to compost that. Oils and fats definitely are tough. Animal products are tough. You can do it. The thing is, you're going to want a lot of browns to mix that stuff up and bury it really good, especially because you're going to be attracting rodents or raccoons or something if you have that buried. But farmers who definitely are raising, like pasture-raised chickens, they definitely compost all the excess remains that they can't use. And the way they do it is they just have so much leaves or wood chips or stuff that they bury it in that it works out. And for worm compost bins, you absolutely do not want to have citrus in there. They're not super happy about that. Citrus, actually, you know, penicillin comes from orange peels, and there's, you know, it tends to grow that, which is an antibiotic, which is not very friendly to your worms. So that's one of the, and then just the citrus oils, you know, actually there's a lovely way to make your own. Orange oil is an incredible solvent and cleaner, and you can make it by taking the orange peels and soaking them in water, heating it up a little bit, and then skimming that oil off the top, and that's orange oil. But, you know, clearly that's not going to be good friendly for your worms. So there's lots of different ways to compost. I definitely love worm composting the best because the worm compost has the most highest level of biological activity, and it's the best compost ever. But I recommend several different compost systems, you know, one for worms, maybe a bigger one for just all the garden debris and trash and what, you know, the bulkier stuff, you know. I mean, having several compost piles or several different compost systems is a smart thing to do. But the worm stuff, that's your most precious. That's your black gold.
Okay. Now, the thing is, too, is that if you are recycling your compost, this is the thing I got a question about. If you're going to do this, now I've got lots of oak leaves here because I live in a grove of about 40 oak trees. And so when they shed and start shedding their leaves, I mean, I got mounds and mounds of this stuff. I got a chipper shredder and I have been shredding all sorts of, you know, various oak. It makes the chipper shredder I got as an earthquake and it makes really, really fine mulch, which I'm thinking, you know, with the leaves and all of this stuff is good to at least put it on the bottom to start things. But, you know, the worms themselves, if I add worms to this thing, we're going to need, I mean, the people are asking me, well, do you put dirt in there too? And it's like, well, you know, that's a good question. I'm going to ask Marjorie when I get her on the phone, you know, what your basic mix should be to start composting.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that 50-50 mix of browns versus greens, and so all those leaves you're talking are browns. And the worms are not necessarily going to need you to have it to use the blower or the, you know, the chipper. They'll be happy with them just being leaves and squashed on it. I often do throw in a handful or two of soil here and there to the compost pile because what that does is it inoculates the compost pile with the bacteria from that soil. And so when you're making your compost, what you're trying to do is create a whole bunch of different bacteria. It's the bacteria and the microorganisms are what really help the plants the most. The minerals are certainly important, but, you know, plants can't actually eat minerals directly. What they need are these microorganisms that help convert the minerals into something that the plant can take. So there's this whole relationship that happens in the soil. You know, soil is not just to hold the plant up. And it's not just that the plants are going into the soil and grabbing rocks and eating them. The plants need the microorganisms to do that. And the relationship they have, it's interestingly enough, the plants will make a form of sugar that they give to the bacteria, and then the bacteria or the fungi bring nutrients to the plants. So there's this amazing network that happens down there. And the more different and the more bacteria and microorganisms that you have in the soil, the more you know, the more active and healthy your plants can be, because there'll be more food sources and more of relationship and community going on in the soil. So it's the fundamental process that we're looking at. And let me just say, one of the really great things about us home gardeners is that we can have so much better soil, compost or soil, than that can be done commercially, because, you know, you're throwing all kind of different things in there. You're throwing the banana peels in there. You're throwing in maybe your hair scraps from when you cut your hair. You're throwing in the shard leaves, or, you know, the broccoli stems, or the stuff you're not using. You're throwing in, like, you know, 50 or 100 or 200 different sources, which means there's all different kind of foods for all different kind of bacteria. Sort of like the analogy of your gut bacteria. You know, the more and diverse gut bacteria you have, the better you're going to be able to digest and extract minerals and nutrients from food that you eat. It's a very similar thing. Commercial composters and commercial soil builders, they usually only have a few items that they're composting to make their compost, and it's nowhere near as vibrant and alive as what you can do in your backyard on a small scale. So, definitely want to encourage people to compost. Yes.
I love it. I love the idea. Now, the kind of stuff, because I've got really crappy soil where I'm at, am I buying
garden? Welcome to America.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. Now, do I buy garden soil by the, like, 40-pound bag? And, I mean, with 10 cubic feet, if I got a couple of 40-pound bags of garden soil, I should be able to really get a good start on things as far as the compost bin with that kind of a size of a tank.
Well, you don't even need that much. What you're doing is you're just really wanting to inoculate that pile with bacteria. So you grab a couple handfuls, you know, and I like to get it from, you know, I'm take a walk out in the park and there's some really nice little bit of compost underneath a tree, you know, from the rotted leaves. I'll just grab a handful of that soil and take it back to my compost pile to inoculate it, right? Or I'm at a friend's garden and they have some really nice soil. I say, can I have a handful of soil? And I'll take that soil and put it into my compost pile, because what I'm trying to do is, you know, generate more and more biodiversity with microorganisms. By the way, I do want to talk a little bit about buying commercial stuff. So I have a love-hate relationship with this concept, but many of the municipalities in the, across the United States take the solid matter from the sewage system and compost it, and they sell it, and it often has some really innocent sounding names, like in Austin, Texas, it's called Dillo Dirt, and Organite, and I forget the names of it, but it's extremely toxic and you don't want to buy it.
Ooh, yeah, we'll make a note of that. Dillo Dirt, yeah, forget that. Check that off. Take that off your list, folks, if you live in Texas. We're going to be back with more with Marjorie. I mean, this is really getting interesting, because she's going to teach you how to survive. This is really important here on the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Yes, friends, and you are my friend. That's a little Plastic Ono band there. 31 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, July 8th. Yeah, it's Friday already. You getting ready to do something for the weekend? Yeah, I've got a whole list of honeydews this weekend for sure. Got a lot to do. And one of the first things I thought about, and this is one of the reasons why we have the forum set up under community on our website. If you go to thepowerhour.com, go to community. When you see the menu, go to community, go to forum, and post. Ask questions. Put stuff down. Tell everybody what you're doing. Share ideas. And most of all, if you go to powerhourfood.com, guess what you can do? You can sign up for a free webinar with Marjorie Wildcraft, who is on the line with us right now for the second segment of this hour. And we've been talking about worm composting. I've noticed there's some places online that are selling this huge bucket of worm for $99. How can we avoid paying that?
Yeah, well, first of all, you can make a worm composter very simply just with two plastic bins that you get from, you know, like Home Depot or something like that. I mean, one of them, you're going to want to drill holes in the bottom, and then you'll probably put a brick or two in the other one just so you have some offset space for the fluid to, you know, excess fluid to run down to. And then you just put one inside the other and put a lid on it and, you know, fill up the bottom of that with some leaves and stuff. You can even go dig worms out of a neighbor's garden. Or you go to don't get the night crawlers. Those are the big long ones, but get worms from, you can go to a fishing tackle bait place for, you know, just a few dollars and pick up a pound of worms. I think you can even buy a pound of worms on Amazon of all places. It really doesn't cost that much. There are, you know, some of the Worm Farm 360 and some of the other worm bin things, they're great because they're already set up and they're a little bit easier to use, but it just doesn't have to be that expensive. 2 5-gallon buckets can also make a great worm bin. So, the real thing, that's a whole potential business. Actually, there's a woman here that at the farmer's market, she sells worms and she sells little worm bin setups that she's making out of 5-gallon buckets she's gotten from some food processor that doesn't need them. So she's getting her inputs really, really cheaply. And worms reproduce like crazy. So, but we all need worms. Wow. And she's our source of worms and it's a little side business. So,
well,
you know,
it's
that's
called
the other really hopeful
right?
thing. There you go. That's the other really great thing. And she also teaches a little class on it. But where there's a problem, there's a business. And we have so many problems. We have so many problems right now, but it's creating all these incredible opportunities. And, you know, if you've hated your job for doing whatever it is that you do all these years, like, you don't be afraid of getting fired or laid off or whatever, because it's just going to open you up to being able to do what you really love anyway, which is what you should be doing. And there's so much opportunity. We absolutely have to completely reinvent the food supply. We have to reinvent our educational systems. We're going very soon here to be completely redoing our financial and economic systems, right? So there's opportunities in every aspect of that for everybody to innovate and contribute.
Right. Now, the thing is that the worms you want, the red worms, are generally, they want to live in the top 6 inches of the soil, right?
In general, yes. You don't really want a really deep thing. And also, they don't want to be in super hot, active compost. So they do want the food, so they'll come up to the top to eat the greens that you're putting in there. But then they're going to want to burrow down, because worms really like about the same temperature range that we like, right? They don't want to get too hot. They don't want to get too cold. So people who are living in very northern climates in the wintertime, you know, put your worms, maybe in the utility room or the mud room or even in the garage if it doesn't get too cold. And then, you know, you can't leave the guys out in the sun in the summertime. The other thing about worms is you are going to accidentally kill some worms at some point or time or another. So, you know, don't worry about it. Just clean out the buckets, get it started, and go again. Worms actually really, really, really enjoy a lot of leaves. They like the browns. They like the leaves a lot. So, and if you're in composting in general, if you're going to overdo it with the browns and not the greens, because the greens tend to get really funky and slimy and anaerobic, which is also another form of composting, but you may not want to do that as a beginner.
Well, like I said, I got lots of oak leaves here, so that they're definitely going in the bin, and I probably have enough there to fill up probably 20 40-gallon bags.
Perfect. You know,
I mean, I got
my strategy. Yeah, my strategy with all my compost areas is I like to have a lot of the browns on hand right next to the pile, because usually what you're bringing is greens. So, you know, you're coming out of the kitchen, you got the coffee grounds, you got the banana peels, you got whatever. And so you put, you know, you're going to put that in the pile, and then you're going to cover it up with the browns, whatever the browns are, whether that's straw or hay or leaves or, you know, newspapers that you shredded. Actually, that's another thing. My home office, I have a little paper shredder, and I like the one that makes the paper into long strips. And I just use it in the compost pile as a brown. I really try to have as close as I can as a zero waste household. It's an astonishing a lot of the things that you can do once you start working on it. And you know, just do a little step by step, right? You know, just, oh my God, I was at the thrift shop and I saw a paper shredder. I'm going to buy that, right? You know, $10. That literally happened to me a couple of months ago. I was like, perfect.
All right. Do you need to start can you just put the worms directly in the compost bin if you're already starting all this and just let them go to work, or do you have to actually get the 2 5-gallon buckets and start with that?
No, you can toss them into the compost pile, but just make sure there's some areas there that are, because, you know, there's different types of hot compost and cold compost. There's different methods. And a lot of times when you've got those browns and greens together, it's getting really hot. So if you just have an area where there's more browns or more soil or frass where they can go to be cool, that's perfectly fine. Yeah, just, you know, you don't have to create a whole new bin for them. I often like to have special, like, this is my worm bin, just because, like, to me, that is the most highest value compost that I'm creating, and I want to take care of it specially. I don't want to put the orange peels or anything in that. Whereas, you know, my other bigger compost piles where I'm throwing all the bigger stuff, you know, I even am throwing the tomato debris and I may even throw the orange peels and the other stuff in there. That's all going to compost down. It's not where my worms are. So it's a different style of composting. It's a little bit bigger, a little bit bulkier, a little bit looser, right? I'd recommend people having several different compost piles.
Interesting. Okay, Sherry in Kansas, you are on the phone with Marjorie Wildcraft. What say you?
Hi, y'all. I bought my red worms, a pound of them, for $15, probably 20 years ago. And now they're all over
and you still have them?
Where there's leaf mold and stuff, you know. And I didn't put them there
that's
except
great,
for
Sherry.
Where I put the compost. And you're not going to have this problem there, Dave, but I had to, because of moles, I put down some kind of wire, like old chicken wire or some other kind of wire that a mole could not get to, and then I kind of, you know, like some of mine are compost piles or some kind of boards or like ties, railroad ties. I've got one that I use some old railroad ties. But they can, during the summertime, they can turn, you know, horse manure, if you, as long as you keep it wet, they can turn it into compost in a month. But all, I put mine all under the shade because they're only going to work for you when the, what is it, 55 degrees or something? They,
well, they'll work, like I said before, they want to be at the same temperatures that we want to be. Yeah, and if you got them out in the sun and it's too hot, they're going to bury down to where it's a little bit warmer. Yeah, one time, Sherry, I had a dog, and I had a compost pile, and the compost pile was never producing anything, and the dog was getting fatter and fatter, and it took me a little while to put two and two together, and I'm like, oh, dang, I need to put some fencing around this thing. No, well, he was eating, you know, I'd throw all the food scraps in the compost pile, you know, and then he would just go right in there and eat all that right up, and I'm like, dang, Chester, you're getting huge, you know, and like, I'm not getting any compost. And I was like, wait a minute, Marjorie, you got to put some fencing around that. Keep the dog out.
I found red worms in swimming in water. I mean, you can't water them too much, Dave, because they like it really wet. But, I mean, I've even seen them in the, and I don't know how they got there, in the bucket where that I put out for the horse for water.
I have a tough time with that too, but because I know some people with aquaponic systems have worms in there. But I do know if you've got a worm bin and it's getting too wet and soggy, the worms are not very happy and they will die. So maybe it's because the water's moving and there's fresh water, or you know, I don't know what that is about it. I know that's not their preferred environment.
What I wanted to ask you, if you come across this, seen anybody that used this stuff called Hugel culture? Do you know what is? Can you talk about
that? Absolutely. I've done some really great Hugel culture beds. So, you can either do this above ground. A lot of people will do it above ground on when they have a really heavy clay or rock soil. I lived in a very sandy soil, and I dug a big pit and did this. And what you want to do is, you know, a whole bunch of wood, like, you know, chop down some big trees, and you've got some big, you know, 6-inch, 12-inch, you know, 20-inch diameter tree stubs or old firewood that can't be used. You're basically piling up a whole bunch of wood and then brush, and then you want to throw some soil in there and cover it. You're making this gigantic mound, basically, that will take a long time to decompose because it's, you know, fundamentally wood. But because it's also fundamentally wood, whenever it rains or whenever you water it, it's going to really hold moisture really well. And as it decomposes, it will, you know, you can plant plants in it. A lot of people will plant a tree, like, in the center of it. Generally, you're going to want something that's kind of big. A hugel culture mound that's small is usually not going to have enough matter to be big. So when I'm saying big, you know, you want something that's, like, 10 feet wide by 6 feet wide, you know, 10 by 6, you know, and then a couple of feet high. And as it'll compost, if you're doing it on the surface, it'll compost down to, you know, closer to ground level. And I've grown, a lot of times what you'll do is you'll grow annuals in it in the first couple of years, and you'll also plant a tree. And then as the tree is growing, you know, you'll be able to get annual crops, and then eventually the tree will provide you with the perennial crops. And I've had some of the best yields of corn that I've ever had, and beans. And then in the meantime, I was growing almond trees in the hugel culture mound. And it's a really, really great strategy, and fairly carefree, because everything's there, right? And it doesn't need as much maintenance as some others just because that wood holds moisture so well. It does really well in dry climates. If you're in a really wet place, usually if you're doing it above ground, then you don't have to worry about drainage issues. And they use that very, very successfully often to do land restoration in large areas where people can't come back to maintain it. So it's a wonderful thing. The hard part of it is finding all that wood.
So do you want to use deciduous wood? You don't want to use conifers, right?
Well, I've used a mix of both. In general, deciduous wood is going to be better, so like your oaks and your ashes and things like that. But there are people that are doing this up in Montana and Wyoming, and really all they have is conifers, and they're doing it there. So it will work. Yep.
Okay. Well, I've got...
We did it here when we had, in Texas, we had that 4-year drought and so much stuff died. It was a huge fire hazard. So, and a bunch of trees died. So we just, chainsawed and got that all piled up into big piles and then, put some dirt in it and brush and planted in it. And that was the plan. And we had to, because we needed to reduce the fire hazard, right? And so that's what we did it for.
Amazing. Sherry in Kansas, appreciate
your call. So I think I'm going to try that. Thank you.
You bet. Chad, North Carolina, you're on the phone with Marjorie Wildcraft. How are you doing?
Okay. How about you?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. What's your question for Marjorie?
Well, I had a couple. I had a relative lived out in New Mexico a few years ago, and they said that they were getting compost, I think, from the city of Albuquerque, and it either had in it or was drawing roaches. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Oof. No, I haven't heard of anything like that. That sounds like it wasn't thoroughly composted, because if it's thoroughly composted, there's not going to be anything that would interest a roach. But I do want to warn everybody about getting compost from a city municipality that's recomposting the human feces. Like, if you think about everything that people throw down the toilet, what your hospitals and your light industry are throwing into the sewer system, I mean, it's really admirable that they used to either burn that stuff or dump it, this raw sewage, into the ocean, which, so I think composting it is a better solution. But they can't compost out the heavy metals, and there's like all kinds of drugs that don't get composted out that end up in that soil. And as I said earlier with Dave, they're often labeling that and making it all sound organic and lovely, and it's not. It's hugely toxic, and you're.
I guess the other question, you may have already answered it, was I had contemplated the possibility of moving out west. I don't know if that'll happen now, but I liked it out there, but I'd had people discourage me from doing that because they say it's so hard to grow anything out west.
The thing about out west is you do not have anywhere near the density of nuclear power plants that you do there in North Carolina and all along the East Coast. Depending on your own level of concern about those power plants ever failing or their cooling systems ever failing, there's that. In the desert, which most of the West is a desert, I've actually found growing in the desert is one of the easiest environments to grow in if you have a reliable water source. And that's a huge if, right? Is water is the big issue. But if you do have a reliable water source, if you think about it, the insect pressure and the weed pressure is much less in the deserts. You don't have to, harvesting and saving seeds is so much easier because you don't have to worry about rainfall and humidity destroying things. In fact, a lot of the seed producers like to grow in more drier, arid regions just because they can dry the seeds much better in those regions. Also, medicinal herb growers like to grow in those regions because it's the drying is a lot easier there. So, you have to have that reliable source of water. And, there has been and there will be in the future a lot of fighting and violence over water rights, and they have way over allocated a lot of the water rights. So it's a big, if you find the right situation, it can be great. Let's just say that.
Well, I just kind of like to jump in here, Chad. I kind of like to, when I did some research about moving here, I was looking into the aquifers, and I've noticed that if you tap into the top end of an aquifer, like the Carrizo, Wilcox, and places like that in Texas, you know, the Gulf Coast aquifer is another one, but the Carrizo, Wilcox has been somewhat depleted by industry, but it's still there. And I remember the first time I planted, it was all sandy soil. The water table was 27 feet. You could hit well water in 27 feet to where the well was collapsing, and that's as deep as you could go. Then I've been in places where the well water was 440 feet deep in order to hit what you wanted. It's all sulfur smell. So a lot of it has to do with where you are. And I'm going to agree with Marjorie here as far as the, you know, the further out you get, the further away from an aquifer. I'd research where all the good aquifers are before I'd plop down anywhere.
Or, you know, like there's places in let's see, I'm thinking like northeastern Utah, anyway, parts of Utah where if you live right by the edge of a mountain range, basically that mountain's side is a gigantic rainwater collection system for you, and you can have viable ways of getting water because it hits that mountainside and comes down. So there are, you know, unique situations, and but again, if you're going to live in the West, you everywhere you really need a source of water. But if you're going to live in the West, you absolutely have to make sure you've got a good, reliable source of water.
Right. Have you ever looked into primary water?
What do you mean by primary water?
There's an organization called primarywater.org where they, I guess they mm-hmm. survey, and I think they dig down like into the earth and get water that way. I haven't really researched it, but it's totally independent of, you know, aquifers and so forth.
Interesting. You know what? I've got the website, and I'll go take a look at that when the show gets done. Thanks for bringing that up. I haven't looked into
absolutely.
That. You know, but people have been growing in the deserts for forever. I mean, the Hopi Indians lived in New Mexico, and I don't know, 6 inches, 8 inches a year, and they have corn that adapted to that. They've got beans that adapted to that. There's all kinds of ways of doing mulch, or there you plant down in trenches, right? You don't do raised beds, you do down in the earth. The Wallapini
right.
pit is the way they also grow. I mean, everywhere you go, there are strategies to do this, and there are humans that have figured it out. So, you know, it's possible everywhere. It's really, what are you most comfortable with?
Right. Well, I appreciate your talking to me about that. I was kind of skeptical. I thought, well, how come so many people have lived out west, you know, if it's so hard to grow food out there? I just can't believe it's that impossible. So,
yeah,
well, we appreciate
your
call
just
on that.
Watching it.
Sure.
Yeah, just watching a TEDx talk recently about dehydration, and this woman was saying, you know, people that live in the deserts, they don't drink 6 or 8 glasses of water a day. But they eat a lot of plants that have water, and then especially things like chia seeds and flax seeds that have that mucilaginous tendency. That helps your body to stay hydrated a lot more than just drinking straight water. So, again, there's lots of techniques. And, you know, if you open your heart and your mind, I think you should live somewhere where you just love waking up in the morning and seeing what you see around you. And you can figure it out.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot to see out west, I tell you. I lived there a few years, and I loved it. So,
well, you can vote with your feet, too, Chad.
That's true, yeah.
Yep, for sure. All right, well, appreciate your call. Thanks for the input there and the questions of Marjorie. We appreciate you. So when we're talking about composting, obviously – here's the thing. I have cedar trees on my property as well, and I've got like 1 ton of cedar mulch. we're using
yeah.
that to keep the bugs away. What's that going to do for the garden? Anything or no?
Yeah, you can use it, you know, use it for mulch and use it in the garden. It's not going to be the best thing ever, but the great news is it does take a while to decompose, which means it does make a good garden mulch. You know, it's funny, from region to region, you use what you have. Like when we were in Texas, we had post oak for firewood, and we would only burn, you know, deciduous trees for firewood. But when I lived out in the West, the only thing they had was conifers, and so they burned conifers for firewood everywhere. You know, the aspen was pretty light burning and quick, but so they used these you know, the pines and the, not the pines and the cedars and the junipers and all the different trees, and then they just had a whole industry around cleaning out the flues for all the gunk that gets accumulated in it. So they, you know, they figure it out and make it work. Yeah, you know, that stuff will eventually compost down, and it does make fantastic mulch, and mulch is really the secret to keeping that moisture in, keeping the temperature levels nice and calm in your soils, especially in the summertime for your plant roots. You know, it's a valuable resource. Maybe not to overdo it, but
sure. Well, yeah, for sure. Now, the thing is that for composting and stuff like that, do you have to have drainage for the compost so that it doesn't fill up with water, right?
Yes, you do. And you do want a little bit of aeration in there. You know, if you're in a really dry area, you don't want that much. But so a lot of times people will make a compost bin just by, you know, using chicken wire. So that way the thing aerates a lot. It's basically, again, you're trying to grow, you know, microorganisms and bacteria and stuff, and they want, you know, they want air as much as we do. And the more they have, the faster that they will reproduce and grow and eat and turn the thing into compost. That's why if you have a compost you turn, what you're basically doing is you're adding oxygen, you know, you're adding air to it, and it's accelerating the bacterial and the microorganism decomposition process. I'm usually not a big fan of turning compost because I have so many other things to do, and if I just leave that pile there, it'll compost eventually. So I'm a little bit of a lazy gardener in that sense, but that is the principle. Just like your soil needs to have a little bit of air in it, right? If you have completely compacted soil, things aren't going to grow there. That's why you want to loosen it up. So, yeah, so you don't want to have a compost bin that doesn't have some kind of drainage holes. And honestly, you want to collect that. It's called leachate when it comes out of it. And it's, you know, kind of just what you'd expect, this black-looking fluid. And you can either dilute that and apply it to the roots of your plants as a fertilizer, or just put it back in the top of the compost bin to, you know, make sure you don't lose those minerals. But that leachate is a very useful substance, so you don't want to lose it.
Appreciate that. Marjorie Wildcraft, thank you so much for coming on the show. PowerHourFood.com is the website. Sign up and get access to the free webinar and get your non-GMO heirloom seed kits. Get your compost bin started and get ready to go. We're out of time for this show, but we're going to have Marjorie back because I know you all have questions. That's why we have our forum for you folks right at thepowerhour.com. Dave Krieger with you. It's been wonderful, and we will see you again on Monday. In the meantime, God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. He's on the earth below. Is bigger than the heavens and the lover of my soul. Great I am, He is Yahweh. Great I am, He is Yahweh. The Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Because of Shalom, He is Yahweh. Righteous Son, He is Yahweh. The three in one, He is Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.